Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Solomon on Blast here on Power Talk Live. If you want to listen, we've got a website that we're setting up, a new one, powertalklive.com, but you can still find us, powertalk1210.com, but that's the new one. Go there, and you can find us streaming live every Saturday, 11 to 12. If you miss us, solomononblast.com will give you the past shows, and last week's is up there now, so if you missed it, you can listen to it there. I always like to look at this day in history events because there's so much history that you really never hear about. In many cases, it reflects situations that are being repeated again today. Of course, if you know Solomon's wisdom, that's because there's nothing new under the sun. The history event that caught my eye for today was from 1888, and it was on this day, March 12th, 1888, that the Chinese government approved a treaty forbidding Chinese laborers to enter the U.S. for 20 years. At the time, there were over 100,000 Chinese immigrants in the U.S., and the Chinese government did this in cooperation with a policy that had been adopted by Congress in 1882, known as the Chinese Exclusion Act of 1882. And it was designed to specifically exclude Chinese laborers from the U.S. It didn't affect the Chinese merchants or professionals that could help in creating trading ties with China, but it just affected the laborers. The reason the Chinese laborers were excluded was because people in California, and more specifically in San Francisco, felt that the large number of Chinese immigrants were stealing jobs from America. Sound familiar? So they lobbied Congress to prohibit them from coming here. Obviously, pretty discriminatory practice by any standard, but we're still dealing with similar events today. There really is nothing new under the sun. So why were all these Chinese immigrants in the U.S.? It was all because of the California Gold Rush that had started in 1849. They came to the U.S. because they were hoping to strike it rich just like the hundreds of thousands of other people that chased the riches during the gold rush. In March of 1848, there were roughly only 157,000 people in the entire California territory, and 150,000 of those were Native Americans, and about 6,500 were Spanish or Mexican descent, and fewer than 800 non-Native Americans. Less than 2 years later, following all these treasure seekers coming in, the non-Native population soared to more than 100,000. In San Francisco alone, the city's population went from 1,000 in 1848 to 20,000 2 years later, and people just kept coming in. By the mid-1850s, there were more than 300,000 in there. And at that particular point, one out of every 90 people in the U.S. was living in California. All those people and money helped get California onto statehood, and the U.S. government purchased California. They became the 31st state in the Union. And that particular migration into California ended up being the largest migration in U.S. history. And all of it because of the gold rush. They approved the San Francisco Mint there in the 1850s. And by the 1852, the gold rush had kind of peaked. $81 million in gold had been produced in that year alone. But then the same thing turned around and happened in Colorado, Pike's Peak, gold rush of 1859. Wikipedia's entry says it's been estimated that as many as 100,000 gold seekers set out for Colorado in 1859. Same kind of thing. Denver converted into a huge metropolis from just a small little settlement. And Colorado produced around 150,000 ounces of gold in 1861 and around 225,000 ounces of gold in 1862. And that's what got the Denver Mint in Colorado. So the same thing happened once more, 1896, gold in the Klondike region in the Yukon, up in what is today known as Alaska, resulted in a migration of an estimated 100,000 prospectors into that region in over a three-year period. Although one reference says that only about 30,000 actually made it through And out of that, only about 4,000 of them found gold. So all of these things, the same theme occurs throughout history, throughout all of these discoveries of gold. And not always were the people that discovered it wealthy. The ones that became wealthy, a lot of them ended up penniless, like the gentleman James Marshall, the one who actually found the gold on John Sutter's property there in California. But people continue to seek these riches, whether it's gold or silver or whatever the latest one is. It's just part of human nature, and it's part of our culture, even probably even more so today. The thing is, though, Solomon is pointing us in a different direction when it comes to wisdom, a lot different than what our confused culture is. It's not the go west young man, you know, there's gold in them there hills. It's not Pike's Peak or bust motto. It's turn your ear to wisdom and apply your heart to understanding. Look for it as for silver and search for it as for hidden treasure. He says, happy is the man who finds wisdom and the man who gains understanding. For her proceeds are better than profits of silver and her gain than fine gold. She's more precious than rubies, and all the things you may desire cannot compare with her. So the question is for today, do you see wisdom as better than the profits of silver, more precious than rubies? And are you seeking wisdom like the treasure seekers sought all of this gold? We'll come back and talk about that right after these commercial breaks. All right, that's the shofar. That's Solomon on blast, calling out people to listen. So we're back with the question today of, do you see wisdom as better than the profits of all this gold and silver that the treasure seekers, the gold rush seekers were after? But, you know, it still goes on today. There's a reality TV show out there called Gold Rush Alaska, and in it, the main character is a guy by the name of Jack Hoffman. And in one of the shows, he made the statement, there isn't one man in America, if he's got anything inside him, who wouldn't want to be here with us. And that's probably true. The point is that even today, the possibility of striking it rich is still enticing to people. Otherwise, things like the multi-state lottery, you know, could have never gotten to be over $1 billion.
Well, I'd like to, you know, Doug, I have to pan back and get like super philosophical in an almost completely worthless way maybe to this conversation. But I think every human being, if you believe that people all come from God and that the story in Genesis about Adam and Eve and, you know, and a garden paradise, whatever that means, you know, means something very clear, that every human being has a stream of consciousness that goes back to believing that we belong, you know,
in a much richer environment, right?
In a very, very, yeah, prosperous environment. And so it even makes sense to me. I see the human nature side of this, that there's something inside people that believe that in every human being, and there's a good side to this, that there's a certain regal dignity that every person is trying to reclaim somehow. And although it gets off track and it goes on chasing all these different other ideas, I think it's in people. I think this is why, you know, even fast forwarding it into the future, why the ideas like inalienable rights and those kinds of things even emerged, because I think human beings see themselves as having, again, this regal beginning.
And I'd say I have to agree with that approach. And there's nothing wrong with having the riches. Obviously, Solomon was the richest man alive and had a lot of wisdom to go with it. And so I'd have to say, yeah, from a riches point of view, it definitely isn't abnormal. It's just how a lot of people go about it, and, you know, whether or not they use wisdom when they're going after these riches. California Gold Rush attracted a lot of immigrants from all over the place. Like I say, there were around 30,000 just from China alone. And when you consider there was no worldwide communication at that point in time, it's amazing that there were that many people that had gotten the story, had heard that there's gold in San Francisco, and, immigrated there.
Well, I think gold is one word that translates very well. in any language. And, you know, people came from all over. I used to live there, and I spent some time studying the local history, and I still do. And people came from all over the world, not just China. They make what makes San Francisco unique to the rest of America, too, is that it has its own Italian immigrants that didn't migrate across the United States to get to California, that actually came directly because whether or not to be miners or whether or not to work for the wealthy people that resulted from mining gold, you know, there was a whole other economy that emerged in San Francisco. So in reality, San Francisco is, what, 100 miles from the find. It's in the Sacramento Hills. It might even be further than that. And so, you know, the city emerged out of the support markets for all the people that were mining at Sutter's Mill.
Yeah, and like I say, when you consider the amount of time it would take to get there, just traveling, a lot of people from the East Coast, I think that some of those articles indicated that it took almost a year for most people on the East Coast to actually find out or hear about the discovery in San Francisco or in California there. And it would take, at a minimum, 17 days just by a steamer to go from Panama up to San Francisco. And usually the whole trip, New York to San Francisco, was like 5 months just by a steamship at that point in time. So you can imagine the amount of effort it took just to come all the way from China for these people and be able to get into that environment. And it said that few Chinese ever really found, few of these people found much wealth there because they had to pay for their passage to get across the Pacific. A lot of them became indentured servants, you know, and they were basically forced to pay work to pay back their debt. And a lot of them weren't really intending to immigrate into the country. They were coming to get their wealth and then go back home in order to support their families.
Yeah, and even though the West was always a little bit ahead, maybe, of the rest of America, they were still finding themselves within the, within the confines of European racism in that time in history. And, you know, I think their opportunities were probably better in the West than maybe it would have been in the East at that time.
Right.
Nevertheless, that stuff was very, very real. And there was a lot of shenanigans that were going on between the West Coast of the United States and China at the time. You know, this is where we get the phrase Shanghai'd from, you know, because they would take ships to China, to Shanghai. And it was not uncommon to get some ranch hands drunk and to the point where they couldn't walk. They'd buy them drinks, and then the guy would pass out, and he'd wake up on a steamer to China.
Right.
And he got, you know, he got Shanghai.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there was a lot of, you can only imagine in human trafficking things going on today and the lies they tell these mostly Eastern European girls right now about being models and this and that. And then they put them into human slavery. So there was probably a human slavery element to some of this, I would imagine.
Right.
And some of the lies being told to these people.
And again, it's the lure of the riches that they're going to get when they end up wherever they're expecting to be, right? That's really what's drawing them. And I look at the history associated with the gold rush. There was a lot more effort involved in order to get to California back in those days, and there really was no certainty of success. People had in their minds that, you know, you just walk around and pick up rocks, I guess, off the ground, and California was full of gold. But their version of get rich quick, I think, is far removed from our viewpoint on it today. I mean, today, you know, the get rich quick is you can go to drive down to Circle K and buy yourself a lottery ticket on Saturday night and you're multimillionaire by morning.
Well, a lot of the inspired business people realized that they weren't cut out to go mine gold, so they had better ideas. They just they stayed back in San Francisco and opened up all these different kinds of businesses and saloons and houses of ill repute and what was all that made up Barbary Coast at the time, and started accommodating these men that would come down the hill, you know, with a bag of gold. A man by the name of Levi Strauss came up with a very good idea for clothing to be used at Sutter's Mill that was tough enough to handle the wear and tear of the job. And so, you know, a lot of people still are familiar with this, Levi's.
Yeah, he actually went in there, I guess, to make canvas tents and instead switched to jeans.
He realized his ultimate goal of having a football stadium named after him in 2015, you know, or whenever they opened that place up, 2014.
You know, if I could time travel to the gold rush, I would open like a pickaxe shop on the way there. I would be rich on everybody's dream to be rich.
Well, you know,
or to show up with a few pickaxes.
Yeah, because it wasn't
buy my pickaxes.
It definitely wasn't cheap in order to get into prospecting for gold. A lot of these people that went into California had little more than the clothes that they were wearing when they showed up. So they had to buy food. They had to buy their supplies. And like you say, San Francisco merchants were all too willing to provide them at a good cost. Some of the pricing that they indicated at the height of the boom in 1849, prospectors could expect prices to cause a definite sticker shock. A single egg could cost the equivalent of $25 in today's money. Coffee went for more than, okay, Fred, this will stop you from drinking at Starbucks if it goes this high, $100 a pound. And a pair of boots could set you back more than $2,500. So, yeah, it wasn't like they were going there and they had everything in their, you know, U-Haul and could show up with everything they needed. There was a lot of cost involved once they got there, not only the cost to get there. So, you know, how much is really involved in today's approach to seeking riches? You get that YouTube video out there and it goes viral. What did that really cost you? Well, you had to take a video with your cell phone is basically what it amounted to. So there's a much different aspect to their seeking of riches and what you see going on today.
Now, the amazing thing about San Francisco is that it not only accommodated all of these people going up to Sutter's Mill, but that it was a beautiful setting in its own right, you know, the weather.
Within
the average annual temperature is like 71 degrees. The setting, the natural beauty of that part of California, and it was able to build a city from the ground up based on, you know, some very rapidly changing factors. Which is not easy to do because those things can come and they can go. People set up tents, they get their fortune, and then they leave. But they were somehow able to establish from that, you know, this incredible city. And the foundations of San Francisco are as bad as you would think of San Francisco today, you know.
Uh-huh.
Barbary Coast, I mentioned that a moment ago. That was what would be kind of downtown North Beach area, although they filled a lot of that in later. This is nothing, just exactly like you would imagine in the movies. I mean, there were showgirls, there were saloons, there were card games, there were people getting shot in the street. I mean, it was a pretty wild time. Sailors coming and going, and you can only almost imagine, you know, how scandalous this would have been to the more genteel folks on the East Coast of the United States.
Yeah, Some of the numbers that I saw, though, said that in 1852, only 8% of the people were females within that area. So almost none of them were women. So the ones that were there were probably there for specific purposes. And there was, like you say, there was a lot of things going on. But the fact that these guys would leave everything behind, you know, obviously not all of them were single, so they left behind their wives, their families. There were stories of people actually abandoning marriages and everything else just to go seek these fortunes. And like I said, it was a high risk environment, and you wonder, did the women back then maybe have a little bit more sense that they weren't willing to take on the high risk and seek these riches when their husbands were, that was what they were going to go do?
Well, these places were fundamentally what they call man camps.
Right.
You know, it really wasn't a place for anybody else that wasn't willing to, you know, get involved in everything that was going on. So I think there was a lot of other factors. You got to also remember that San Francisco was founded by the Spanish, 1776. So they had been there for a long time, but that was, they were not up on the waterfront. They were back at the Mission Dolores area, which today is definitely a couple miles from the water. So, okay. And then they had the Presidio as well, which is near the Golden Gate Bridge, and which was pretty far from the Mission Dolores, settlement by itself. So, there was also some stuff happening behind the scenes. There were some regular folks,
yeah,
some families, some decent people. I think there were 700, something like that. And I say Spanish families because Mexico owned California, for 25 years, mm-hmm, or more or less. I mean, these were Spanish settlements that went way back. So there are probably 700 Spanish families in San Francisco.
We're kind of looking at all these people that were seeking riches coming out of these gold rushes and everything. And you made the comment, Fred, that there was a lot of criminal activity, a lot of crime. Definitely, when you look at it from the aspect that when it comes down to riches, people are going to be greedy. We talked a little bit about that last week in terms of the envy aspect of it. Sutter lost his land trying to fight off all these people coming in seeking the treasures. And Claim Jumpers, that name's just not it's just not a name for a restaurant. There was a whole reason they were called Claim Jumpers. They would come in and steal other people's claims and mine the gold and kill off somebody that was already there. So there was a lot of uncertainty there. And Proverbs is pretty clear on that. Solomon says, cast but a glance at riches and they are gone, for they will surely sprout wings and fly off to the sky like an eagle. So a lot of these guys, some of them made fortunes, but just as quickly as they made them, they'd end up losing them overnight. And I think a lot of that was they'd take the money they did make when they brought the gold in and end up down on Barbary Coast, and next morning they were having them head back out again.
Yeah, exactly. They were they would find themselves in more trouble than they started. And isn't that the whole idea of the scripture talks about what ill-gotten gain, or even just fast wealth, the nouveau rich, they right. call them. And, I mean, how many times do you hear stories of a football player who earned several million dollars in his career? He's in trouble with the IRS. He's, at first he had a posse. He took them everywhere he went. I remember living in California.
I thought it was an entourage.
I remember when I was living there, I won't name the well-known basketball player. They know him here very well. And, they say every time he went into Walmart, he had a whole posse with him, and people were filling up carts of
what's he got?
Whatever.
What's he looking in Walmart for, I guess?
Well,
the question
it's
there,
funny.
Right?
He was in Sacramento, but. That's the way you live. You have a bunch of hangers on, and you realize that money comes and it goes, And that was the gold rush was a lot like that. I thought one of the most interesting things I ever learned about the Transcontinental Railroad, which eventually was part of this story,
right,
you know.
In order to connect the two sides of the country.
Once they connected Chicago to Los Angeles, the Chinese immigrants were a lot of the workers that actually laid down those tracks.
Yeah.
And when it was all said and done, very few people actually made money on the railroad. There were, and this is the way business usually works. There are multiplied thousands of contractors, each trying to stake a claim, trying to make some money. And eventually, it's a survival of the fittest sort of thing, and somebody comes along and buys everybody out. And most of the other people end up going out of business. And most of the contractors who built the railroad went out of business.
Right.
And, you know, a few of the others, of the better businessmen or whatever, more fortunate businessmen or more ruthless businessmen, however you want to look at them, ended up controlling the railroad. So I don't know how much of this is just the way life itself works, you know. Yeah.
There was a letter that I had read. It was just a short paragraph. This was from a gentleman that had gone to San Francisco, gone to California seeking his riches, and he was writing back to his wife. His name's Horace Root, and he wrote this in October of 1851, so about 2 years after the whole gold rush started. He says, "I've worked harder here than I ever worked at home. I've been repeatedly disappointed in making the amount of money I expected to make here. I knew that you were very anxious to see me, and I could hardly bear the thought of telling you that I must be so long away from you. So you must excuse me for writing to you so seldom. I've never taken any comfort since I left you. No, my dear, for more than 2 long years, I've never known what it was to lay down upon any bed at night, content and happy." So here he is, leaving his wife behind, going to seek all these riches, and for 2 years... he can't sleep contented or happy. So the, you know, the whole concept of chasing after these riches is pretty clear in the, in that letter that he writes, but he's still there hoping that he's going to make it, I guess.
Well, you know, Paul weighed in on this years ago, the Apostle Paul. I mean, a few years before, I should say. And he made this statement: "Those who desire to be rich fall into temptation and a snare, and into many foolish and harmful lusts, which drown men in destruction and perdition." I mean, that's a mouthful. But he was really commenting on what can happen to somebody who goes out and chases this stuff,
right,
and how it can really get a hold of you and not just leave you a little bit unsatisfied, but it actually carries with it some super destructive elements. And I think this writer of your letter is kind of reflecting that sentiment, that this was not anything that I thought it would be. And I think this is when people take on this level of what you would call loving it, loving wealth, and placing it as the most important thing in their lives. I do think you are headed for some really bad stuff unless you can pull out of that.
Right.
And realize it's not there for you.
And for us, you know, today, everybody's still looking for that pot of gold at the end of the rainbow there, whether it's for, you know, our kids. We see all the sports figures out there, and there's a lot of kids out playing Little League and basketball and everything else. And why? Because parents are hoping that their little Johnny's going to be the next Michael Jordan or whoever. And it's the same way even from the entertainment industry. You know, the little girl.
And it's such a long shot.
Right. Know, it's like the uncertain wealth that these guys are dealing with.
Well, like the old line is, you have a better chance of being killed by a terrorist, I think, than you do of accomplishing that.
Making the NBA.
Yeah, even the U of A basketball program, with it, as successful as it has been, just like Jake Shorts would suggest to us, as successful as they have been, you know, how many of these guys are actually in the NBA? And how many of the best players here end up in, like, the D League somewhere? Which I'm sure is not a terrible salary compared to a lot of them.
Right.
But still, in other words, for the love of the game, at least you could say about players like Michael Jordan and people like that and Steph Curry, there's something in these people that look like they love what they do. And I think that's important.
Right. That's the important
part. Protection of your soul, you know. Right. And I think in most cases, most of them would feel that way. They just love doing it. And to be able to get paid doing what they love to do is a great thing, you know.
Well, the real approach, I think, when we go back to what Solomon was talking about, is he says that, and we know Solomon asked for wisdom first, and ended up with the riches. So he says that in Proverbs 8. He says, riches followed wisdom for Solomon. He says, I love those who love me. This is God speaking basically through the proverb. I love those who love me, or wisdom speaking, and those who seek me find me. With me are riches and honor, enduring wealth and prosperity. So my fruit is better than fine gold, and what I yield surpasses choice silver. So wisdom is really what should be sought after first. And like with Solomon's situation, the riches part of it will follow that.
Well, I guess it gets down to this. You feed the soul first, right?
Absolutely.
And then the other things will find their level. Let me use another really important San Francisco example. In fact, this is just happening right now. They just changed the name of the Waldo Tunnel, which is just north of the Golden Gate Bridge.
So it's going to be Where's Waldo, and nobody's going to know?
Well, Where's Waldo is the question now. They just changed the name of this well-known tunnel. In fact, it's featured in some movies. One of them is Dirty Harry. That's where he stands on top of a bus and jumps on the bad guy. But anyway, they're changing the name of the Waldo Tunnel to Robin Williams Tunnel. It just happened probably in the last month. Huh. Robin Williams was a resident of Marin County and probably the San Francisco Bay Area for most of his life, I think. So this has created, of course, some kind of controversy. You know, Waldo is one of the original pioneers, the American pioneers anyway, of the area, and so they changed the name to Robin Williams Tunnel, which is a bit of a controversy because Absolutely. The fact that he committed suicide, and they're saying, what kind of message is this sending every time you drive through here? And mommy, who was Robin Williams? And then you go into that, but in a weird way, Robin Williams' life represents everything we're talking about.
Yeah.
In other words, he was richly gifted. He made lots of money.
Had a lot of fame.
Had a lot of fame. He was everything that the world could ever want to offer a person was at his disposal, right? It was all at his fingertips. He basically had the best choices you could ever want or imagine. And yet we see, apparently,
self-destructive.
When push came to shove, he couldn't find any more reasons to go forward. I'll just leave it at that. So I think that kind of makes your point here about wealth and riches. And so to kind of answer the controversy in my own head, maybe Robin Williams is extremely representative
of the real world
of the real San Francisco Bay Area.
Yeah,
in fact.
That aspect does kind of come into play for San Francisco when you consider how many people probably went in there seeking those riches, found them, but in the end ended up losing them and destroying themselves.
I remember reading the Chronicle in 98-ish, maybe 99. I'm not exaggerating. This was before the tech bubble burst in 2000. It says that in the San Francisco Bay Area, which would have included Silicon Valley, and there were 68, 69 new millionaires every single day. Every day. They had their own gold rush in the late 90s.
Right.
And, of course, the tech,
it blew
the dot-bomb thing, when it blew up, all these people that had been getting money from venture capitalists and all this startup stuff that never amounted to anything, the whole place just blew up and really did cause some major ripples there for a while. I mean, in commercial property, lots of abandoned buildings there for a while. But San Francisco always has a way of bouncing back.
It does. Even when you look at it from the fire, great fire in San Francisco after the earthquake that destroyed it, bounced back from that. All right, we're going to take a break here, and we'll come back with more Solomon on Blast. Okay, we're back. More Solomon on Blast here. So the question is, how do you seek the wisdom first, and is it, Where's your source of information? Where's your source of wisdom going to come from? Are you going to Google it? Because it's true, right? Everything on the internet is true.
Well, here you said something interesting as we were breaking there, Doug, about the great San Francisco earthquake, April 18th, 1906. that changed the face of the city, ironically, for the better. San Francisco was the sum total of Barbary the Gold Coast. Rush, Barbary Coast, and massive immigration and all that went with it. And so it made it a very fascinating and interesting place, but it was a very out-of-control place. I mean, you can go into the history. There are some...
One of the things that I read about that I didn't know was... And the reason I think the earthquake and all the fires were so destructive was most of the housing was built off of the ships that were abandoned in the harbor. When a lot of these ships would come in, and people were more concerned with finding gold than anything else, and they just left the ships sitting in the harbor. So they started dismantling them and building buildings.
The way that the codes, the way they were organized, the families. San Francisco was, you know, they say justice was out of control. I mean, the judges were paid off. The people that were keeping justice have some great vigilante stories there. There was a group of Australians that I guess just bullied and murdered some Colombian immigrants, and the people in charge didn't do anything about it, and so. A group of men on two different occasions had to take it into their own hands. There's a place called Washington Square. It used to be called Portsmouth Square, right off of North Beach area. Another building you've seen in movies, church, is there.
Oh, right. Uh-huh.
Anyway, they hung these Australians right there in Portsmouth Square, which is today Washington Square. It was done not by the law. It was done by vigilantes. So it was this kind of place. But there was something about the San Francisco earthquake of 1906 caused the entire downtown area to burn all the way to the Western Addition. It just burned for the most part, and the people had to flee, and, you know, mayhem and destruction. It was out of that, without going into all the detail, that Bank of America emerged, trying to give people funds to rebuild and or just relocate, Wells Fargo, all of these... this other side of San Francisco emerged, the legitimate side of San Francisco. But it came back to life.
Yeah, the one story I read said that the only building that remained standing was the U.S. Mint. And because it was still there, they were able to have a way of providing funds for the reconstruction effort. And so that was the only, I guess, formal building that remained standing after that whole entire...
And they completely reinvented the city, and one of the things that happened from that was that Barbary Coast was completely destroyed. And so it gave the decent, quote-unquote, decent folks a chance to reestablish themselves. And one of the untold stories of San Francisco that you don't hear about is all the Protestant missionaries that went out there as well. Trying to resolve the moral dilemma would be a nice way to put it.
Trying to deal with
it. But there were tons of those that went out as well. So as a mission field.
Yeah, to put it into context, basically San Francisco got built on with the thought of riches, people seeking riches first, and after the fire it was more let's take the wisdom approach and rebuild.
Yeah, let's rebuild a decent society or decent community.
And the riches followed that, and San Francisco is still one of the areas, at least in the United States, with the wealthiest people. I think from a billionaire perspective, there's more in Palo Alto than there is anywhere else in the country.
Well, the Bay Area also always, I should say, rivals New York City as the most expensive place to live in the country, and they're always contending with each other. Although... my son, who spent a lot of his childhood there in San Francisco, we went to New York City one time when he was just about 17, and he had never been to New York, and so he was extremely parochial. That's a nice word. When it came to saying, "Oh, San Francisco is way better than New York," he kept saying the whole time. I said, "Okay, well, that's enough, you know." "Oh no, San Francisco is way better than New York." So one of the differences between New York City and San Francisco is that San Francisco is surrounded by extremely affluent cities, whereas you get around New York City, once you get outside of Manhattan,
that's it.
It, you know,
Yeah.
You can start looking like you're just about anywhere.
Right. And the one thing about seeking wisdom is there really is a much bigger time cost to it. I mean, like I said, when you look at it from the gold rush, these guys spent a lot of time traveling and a big learning curve for them to be able to figure out how to mine the gold, because most of these people had no clue. They'd never done anything like that. Most of them were farmers from whatever part of the country. And there's a much bigger time cost to wisdom, and I think that's part of it, is people don't want to pay that price. There really is no get-wise-quick scheme out there. You never hear anybody pushing a get-wise-quick scheme. It's always the get-rich-quick. So the real hard part is putting that time in, and you have to put real time in order to get that wisdom. The benefit out of it is it doesn't disappear. Nobody can take it from you. Nobody can claim jump it, and you end up poor again. So there's a much better aspect to approaching the wisdom side first, because it's going to be there and it remains with you.
Even looking at that in a natural sense, just in a strict business sense, there are people that can who have made a lot of money, and they can lose everything, and they still have this level of confidence that, oh, okay, give me another opportunity and I can get it back.
And I think that's right? The wisdom part.
That's
of
the
it.
Wisdom part right. of it, that they don't just it's and they see it as more than just getting your hands on something, as opposed to the concept, you know.
Right. The journey to do it.
Yeah, and the confidence to be able to do that. Mm-hmm. And I think that speaks to the wisdom. So in your one greater than Solomon idea here is that is not there's even a higher version of that, which is not just based on the wisdom of our insides, right. you know, but it has to do with where it comes from. It comes from heaven.
Right. And Jesus says in Matthew chapter 6, he says, don't store up for yourselves treasures on earth. And we know this is a popular one, where moth and rust destroy and where thieves break in and steal, but store up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroys and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, that's where your heart will be also. And I think what everybody reads that, you think of, okay, money, the riches, the wealth. But I think part of it is the real treasure is Jesus himself, and we know in heaven. So it's really that's who you're going to be seeking after. It's not the riches. It's not the wisdom. It's Jesus, because he's the one that has the wisdom that you are seeking and the riches that you are seeking.
Yeah, it's wisdom. Yeah, wisdom isn't just something you look inside and find. Wisdom comes from God.
And that's
the point.
Right.
That so it's not just looking inside and searching yourself out, and somehow it's deep inside of you and you're going to tap it.
Solomon points that out. You know, I started out with the verse where he says, if you look for silver and search for it as hidden treasure, well, that particular proverb goes on to say that you'll understand the fear of the Lord and find the knowledge of God, for the Lord gives wisdom. From his mouth comes knowledge and understanding. And I think that's really the whole point here, is that when you seek wisdom, what's your source? And where are you going to get it from? If you're looking for the real truth,
right,
it's going to come from God.
Well, to follow the gold rush analogy, they didn't just have gold. They had to go mine gold. You had to find it, and you had to mine it. Right. And wisdom, it would be the same idea, right? You don't just have it. You have to find it, and then you have to mine it.
Yeah. At the beginning, there was a lot of stuff that was just kind of sitting around, or not very buried, but once that disappeared pretty quickly. And it was the same way with even the gold rushes in Colorado and up in Alaska, that at the beginning there was a lot of stuff that was pretty easy, but when it really came down to it, the ones that really found the wealth worked for it hard, you know, went underground, had to bring in a lot of equipment in order to be able to extract what was really the source of the gold versus just what had kind of come out through natural runoff and erosion and that kind of stuff.
Right. And eventually it had San Francisco, as we complete that analogy, is a picture of its survival is not just based on finding, you know, nuggets of gold near Sutter's Mill. It became an entire economy, you know,
right.
of ideas. You had to establish families. You had to establish churches. You had to establish community. I mean, and real life works like that, in other words, in every concept, right? Someone's going to break through in life. It's not just making $1 million, winning the lottery,
right.
having everything go your way. At some point, you have to have some purpose bigger than yourself.
And you see that with the athletes, like we had talked about, these sports guys. They don't get their 100% on just their talent. They've worked hard to do it. So if you're wise, you're going to start by seeking wisdom and then follow that. Then the riches will follow that. At least that's the way Solomon's done it, and that's the way God tells us to do it. So until next week, keep thinking wisely and keep